As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 83, The Conquest of the Yucatan, part 1. As we have moved around Latin America, telling the stories of how the Spanish brought different parts of the continent into their empire, a pattern of rapid expansion has emerged. Individual conquistadors have died along the way, but often from things like disease, shipwrecks, or their own infighting. Sometimes they found themselves beaten back by the indigenous people they encountered, or they diverted their focus elsewhere in the face of resistance. But often, this was because they had overstretched themselves and saw better opportunities elsewhere. There have been notable occasions where things have been difficult. The most obvious ones came when they attacked the Aztec and Inca empires. Last episode, we also saw the indigenous people in the Buenos Aires area play a part in the abandonment of that settlement. These, however, are the exceptions, and once conquests were complete, that was usually it. The Neo-Inca state did resist for decades, but they did so from outside, having abandoned their empire and moved to the remote mountains. The Yucatan Peninsula will prove to be different. As the Spanish attempted to incorporate it into their empire, their progress will be slow and hard-fought. Each step forward will be a struggle, and there will be times where they'll be forced to take steps backwards instead. When the process was completed, the province will be perhaps the most fractious under their control. There will be simmering resistance and periodic rebellions for centuries. Last time we were in Mesoamerica was the end of the conquest of the Aztec. Cortes had successfully taken control of Tenochtitlan and was expanding out into the rest of the former Aztec Empire. He had taken control of the south of Mexico, today's Oaxaca and Chiapas, as well as part of Guatemala and the rest of Central America. In the north, he had conquered the Purépecha, but the deserts which today form roughly the northern third of Mexico were largely outside of his control. While the Spanish had rushed south, all the way to Panama, where they had joined up the land under their control with the already existing colony down there, there was a big patch of land missing, the Yucatan. This had actually been one of the first places in Mesoamerica which the Spanish had seen, being the closest part of the mainland to their colonies on the Caribbean islands, and by extension, Spain. In the 1510s, Francisco Hernández de Córdoba made an attempt to conquer the peninsula, but he had failed. Juan de Grijalva had sailed along the northern coast in 1518, before continuing around the Gulf of Mexico, and a year later, Cortes set off to conquer the Aztec. On the way up to Veracruz, he stopped in the Yucatan and found Jeronimo de Aguila and Gonzalo Guerrero, shipwrecked there and living among the Maya. By making Veracruz his base on the coast and focusing on the Aztec, he bypassed the Yucatan, and it was left to deal with later. As time went on, the peninsula was encircled by Spanish colonies, and later had become now. Together with today's Guatemalan province of Petén, which neighbours it, was and is culturally Maya like the Yucatan, and has the same humid lowland geography, the Yucatan formed a huge piece of land which sat between two of the most important colonies in the empire. With its position and the abundance of ambitious Spanish conquistadors floating around, there was no way that it was going to remain unbothered for long. When it did start, the conquest of the Yucatan was very much a family affair. Confusingly, it was largely conducted by three closely related men, all of whom have the same name, Francisco de Montejo. I use this name to refer to the oldest one, the original leader of the expedition. I will call his son the younger, and then the third one, a nephew of Francisco, for his sister, and therefore a cousin of the younger, he will be called the nephew. The eldest Montejo was a minor noble from Salamanca. Before getting his commission to go out on his own into the Yucatan, he had spent many years in the Spanish Americas, and his career to date reads like a list of people who we have encountered on previous episodes. He was recruited in Spain by Dávila to help out in his Panama colony, and he was sent ahead to gather up more soldiers in Santo Domingo. After some time in Panama, Dávila sent him south to what was at the time unconquered Colombia, but this expedition appears to have been short and unnoteworthy. After that, he decided that he would have more opportunities elsewhere, and he joined Diego Velázquez de Cuellar on his conquests in Cuba. Despite arriving after most of the work had been done, he was still given land there for taking part. This gave him a good income and a higher social standing. Next, he joined Grijalva, and so he got his first sight of the Yucatan coast when they sailed around the peninsula. Apparently, he was the first Spaniard to step off the boat and on to Aztec land. Presumably, Montejo was known to Cortés, because once he had returned to Cuba, Cortés sought him out and asked him if he would put the knowledge he had gained on Grijalva's expedition to use for his planned trip to Mexico. He was made captain of one of the ships and put in command of all the men who travelled on it. Having already sailed up the Gulf of Mexico, he was sent ahead to find a place to establish a base, and so it was Montejo who chose Villarica to be the first Spanish settlement in Mexico. He was made one of its governors, and Cortés clearly trusted him, as the jobs kept coming. You might remember from the series on the conquest of Mexico that Velázquez, the man who Francisco had joined in Cuba, had fallen out with Cortés and believed that Cortés was disobeying orders by setting sail after he had withdrawn permission. This dispute came to a head when he sent Narvaez to track Cortés down, and the two fought a battle, which Cortés won. Both sides now had to present their side of the story to the king and justify their actions. It was Montejo who Cortés chose for this crucial task. Montejo was successful, and Cortés was allowed to retain control of Mexico. His trip back to Spain meant that Montejo missed many of the important events of the conquest, but in many ways, his ability to persuade the king was just as important. When he returned, Cortés rewarded him with land in Mexico, on the edge of Tenochtitlan. He was called upon again a few years later to act as an intermediary for Cortés in Spain, and with this done, he decided it was time to advance his own cause. Montejo was a rising star within the Spanish Empire. He had taken part in many different campaigns and built up a large number of contacts among the most important conquistadors. He didn't seem to have fallen out with any of them, and even potential enemies such as Narvaez seemed to like him. It wasn't hard then to persuade the king to let him stake his own claim to the Yucatan. Apparently, Narvaez supported him in his petition to the king. Before leaving, he also married the widow of another conquistador, and then left to take up his position as the governor of the Yucatan. It seems that this new viceroyalty would be completely independent of Mexico. It seems strange to me, considering that the coastline was well charted, including twice by Montejo himself, and that the Spanish had travelled down into Central America. But apparently, it was still believed that Yucatan was an island. So this might help explain why it was to become a separate province. In 1526, he sailed across the Atlantic and stopped in Hispaniola to gather up some more men and supplies. Next, he followed the southern coast of Cuba and made for the island of Cozumel, just off the coast of the peninsula, and not too far from where Cancun is today. Cozumel was inhabited by a small Maya state, and the people there had already had a fair amount of contact with the Spanish. Different Spanish groups had passed through on their way to other places, and so they had not tried to conquer the island. When Montejo arrived, relations were friendly enough. Presumably, he would have wanted to come back and take the island eventually, but for now, Montejo was happy enough to use it as a staging post. He sailed across to the mainland after a few days and claimed the spot where he landed for Spain.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Here too, he was able to trade with the local Maya villagers while he decided how to approach the interior. He founded a settlement and named it Salamanca after his hometown. Even if the Maya were friendly enough, there were not very many of them, and they only produced enough food to feed their own population. It's worth reminding ourselves that, although they were not far from some of the ruins of the great Maya cities, that age had long passed. They may have still had small populations, but places like Chichen Itza, Tulum, and Corba were in ruins even then. At this point, the Maya largely lived in smaller settlements, and no state could effectively control large amounts of land. In some places there were larger polities, but in others, such as here, small caciques ruled collections of villages, and the borders of their states did not extend much beyond them. Whether these Maya were willing to provide food, or if the Spanish tried to force them, they were unable to help out. The Spanish were unable to help themselves either. They had picked a bad spot full of swamps which harbored tropical diseases, and which possessed a lack of clean water. Many of the colonists started to die, and their food began to run out. Montejo sent a ship up to Veracruz to buy more supplies, but the captain died there, it's not clear why, and the ship decided to go to Cuba rather than return to Salamanca. Relations broke down with the Maya, and so the risk of attack added to the list of reasons why it was impossible to go out and expand the territory under their control. The Spaniards who survived were confined to Salamanca for 2 years, but eventually, through perseverance, they managed to stabilize their position. Some of them learnt the local Maya language, and they were able to rebuild relations. The disease started to abate, and they learnt how to better obtain food from the foreign environment. It helped that there were now less mouths to feed. When he was finally ready to continue, Montejo first had to deal with the discontent which their situation had created among his men. Being so close to Cortes, and having been present for part of the conquest of Mexico, he had had the chance to learn from him. When he heard that some of the sailors planned to sail off to Veracruz and abandon the colony, rather than take part in the march he had planned, he had the boat sunk, just like Cortes had done. Montejo decided to go north, along the coast in the hopes of finding another place with a harbour, so that he could relocate Salamanca. As he crossed into the lands of new Maya groups, who he had no existing relationship with, he found that, for the most part, they chose to avoid him, rather than attack or make friendly contact. Again, they had trouble finding enough food, and soon they were beginning to fall ill. Montejo himself almost died from some sort of disease. When they reached the stretch of coastline opposite Cozumel, they encountered the Maya cacique who ruled the island. Recognizing them, he agreed to help out. Not only did he provide them with the food they desperately needed, but he vouched for them with the other caciques there on the mainland. This meant that as they marched north, the Spanish were treated as an interesting curiosity rather than a potential threat. As they reached the area where Cancun is today, the population grew larger and the towns bigger. At the town of Conil, they learned how the Maya obtained much of their water. The Yucatan is studded with cenotes, caves which link to the vast aquifers underneath the peninsula. There aren't many rivers, but there is a large amount of water locked beneath the ground. The cenotes provide access to it. Montejo stayed for 2 months in Conil before deciding to march inland. It's quite difficult to accurately understand the exact geopolitics of the Maya people at the time, but it seems that although each small cacique ruled his own settlement group, those in whose land he had passed through so far had some sort of alliance agreement, and collectively the region was known as Ikap. Perhaps it functioned something like the Muisca Confederacy in Colombia. This is probably why the good word of the Cozumel cacique had been worth so much on the mainland. Now, however, Montejo was leaving Ikap. The first town they reached was called Chahuaca, and here as before, they were welcomed. Unlike before, however, the friendship given by the ruler of Chahuaca was not genuine. Over the course of a few days, the Spanish relaxed, and instead of camping together in one spot, they spread out around the town in smaller groups. One morning they woke up to find the people of Chahuaca ready for a massacre. Montejo was unable to put up an organized defense, and the isolated groups of Spaniards had to fight for themselves until eventually they managed to regroup. According to their account, despite the surprise, it was their armor and horses which allowed them to eventually turn the tide of the battle and repel the Maya. The next day the cacique came with an offer of peace, and Montejo accepted it. He moved on to the next large town to the west,
Aque.
In an apparent sign of friendship, the cacique of Chahuaca warned him that the people of Aque were aggressive and would likely attack them. Secretly, however, he sent a message to Aque, saying that the Spanish were on their way to invade, pretty much guaranteeing that there would be a fight when they arrived. Aque was empty, its people preparing to attack the Spanish. Apparently the Chahuaca had agreed to send men with them to help carry their supplies, but these men looted the empty city before abandoning the Spanish. The attack came the next morning. The Spanish were able to defend themselves and retain control of Aque. Next, they moved on to a town called Loche, where the ruler apparently tolerated their presence, but initially refused to meet with them. When he finally did agree to talk, he is said to have been aloof, and he refused to engage with Montejo when he tried to discuss Christianity and the Spanish king's supposed claim to the region. Montejo decided that it was best not to push it. Water was becoming an issue again, and his numbers were dwindling. He came to the conclusion that he had achieved all he could, and he began the march back to Salamanca. On the way there, he found that 20 men he had left behind in a place called Pole, because they were too ill to carry on, had been killed by the people there. And this just about sums up the whole campaign. Nominally, he thought that he had agreed some sort of sovereignty for himself and Spain in pretty much all the towns he had passed through. This had been achieved either by diplomacy or by force. In truth, however, if any such agreements were made by the Maya caciques, it was just words to them, and they had no intention of paying any attention to them once the Spanish had gone away. Montejo might argue that he had brought much of the northeast of the peninsula under his control, but this was an illusion, and even it had come at a high cost. He could argue to the king, or to anyone else who asked, that he had successfully established a settlement in Salamanca, but in truth it was barely viable. He wrote back to the king and told him that things were going well, but he must have known that they weren't. Instead of staying in Salamanca and trying again to expand from there, he decided to leave the Yucatan and go to Cortes's Mexico colony. Here he spent 2 years gathering up more supplies and trying to decide what to do. Next time, we will find out what he came up with. If you've enjoyed this episode, or the podcast as a whole, and you're feeling generous, a really helpful thing to do would be to leave a review wherever you get your podcasts from. This helps new people discover the podcast. If you're feeling really, really generous, it's possible to make a small donation, and these help cover the costs of hosting and running the podcast. Information about how to do this can be found in a link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica, and that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @historylatinam. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money.